Welcome to a Listen to Older Voices Golden Moments program. I'm brought to you through the Toorak Times. This is a repeat program from our archives that we believe has merit enough to rebroadcast so that the story and the person's life can be shared with those who may have missed it the first time. Hello, I'm Rob Greaves, and welcome to another program in the continuing series of Listen to Older Voices. This is part one of a three-part program featuring the life and times of 86-year-old Olive Nichols. Olive was born in the period we now call the Great Depression and recalls just how her family and others survived in those very difficult days. In fact, some of the things that Olive and her family did to survive have direct relevance to today's difficult times. When war did come to Australia, we learned that as soon as she was 19, Olive joined the Navy. Also, in today's program, we learn a little about Keith, the man that Olive would eventually marry and who, like Olive, was in the Navy. We follow Olive as she grows up through the halcyon days of radio through to the commencement of television and the Olympic Games in Melbourne in 1956. But to start at the beginning, here I am talking with Olive. Well, first of all, Olive, thank you very much for inviting me into your home and appearing on our program. Could I start by asking you when you were born and where were you born?
I was born at Essendon, out the other side of Melbourne. And I think the earliest memories was when I was three. My mother was sick and my family were all very keen Essendon supporters. And what were they going to do with Olive? And my English grandfather said, take her with us, of course. So
this is a newborn baby?
No, 1926.
Oh, 1926. You were three.
I was three. I went to my first footy match.
That's your first footy match. Do you actually recall any of that?
No.
No, it's just you just knew it happened.
Yes. So being in the midst of AFL at the moment, I've been very interested in football. Only I'm one-eyed bomber.
Well, I wonder why after being
taken to three. And I married a man who was one-eyed magpie.
Oh, dear.
Oh, and the only way I could see Essendon play was to go when the home matches were in their own grounds.
Yes.
I'd sit in the Collingwood stand and barrack for Essendon.
Quietly or loudly?
Very loudly. Why not? Another early memory of Essendon, when I was quite young, because it was in what was called a stroller or a pusher or whatever, everybody went for a walk on a Sunday afternoon, and we walked up to Essendon Aerodrome and people sat on a post and rail fence under the gum trees and watched the planes.
And, of course, what a lot of people wouldn't know today is that Essendon was the main airport then, wasn't it?
Of course, yes. Yes, Tullamarine was farmland.
That's right.
And, as a matter of fact, a very dear friend of mine, his family were farmers, and they were out at Tullamarine. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about Dad. What was Dad like?
Dad was very cold, quiet, very reserved. He was, as I say, in World War One, and he was at Westmere and joined up from there and was in the Light Horse and was the first reinforcements at Gallipoli. He wasn't in the actual first landing. But then he, from there, he was in France, and a lot of these names that we've been seeing last week very familiar to me. We were living at Essendon. We moved from there because my father had mustard gas and his health was very poor. Before he came to Australia, he'd been apprenticed to tailoring, and they had a sort of a rehabilitation scheme, and so he went into the railways as an upholsterer. And he was in Victorian Railways as an upholsterer forever, sort of, until he retired.
When did he come to Australia?
He was 19 when he came. He was born in 1891, and he
So it would have been out here around 1910, 1912.
About that, yes.
Oh, well, give us early in the century.
Yes, quite early.
Did he ever tell you any stories from those early days in Australia?
Not very much, but I do recall the first Anzac March, I think it was, he marched, and that's why I've got that newspaper cutting things over there from last year. I cut those out of the paper, and they had putties, and I can remember sitting on the floor unwinding the putties.
Putties?
Putties. Instead of leggings, it was like a roller bandage.
Okay. Why were you doing this?
You're
just playing it.
He came home from the march.
Oh,
you
right.
See, they marched in their uniform.
Yes, of course,
So they would be my earliest memories.
Was he married to your mum when he came to Australia, or did
he
meet her
No, he met her here.
Yes.
Met her post-war, I think. Yes.
Tell us about Mum. What was she like?
She was a very more of a businesswoman than my father. She was apprenticed to dressmaking and worked in J.C. Williamson's wardrobe department. And very interesting, you know, saw a lot of the live plays.
Yes, I'm sure she would have.
She came from Kensington, and her grandfather, I suppose it was, had this a bit of Scottish ancestry on her side, and there was some of the family. It must have been her grandfather, I would think, was at Eureka Stockade.
Right. Oh, that's something to be proud of.
So this is probably why I love Australian history.
Listen to Older Voices, Living History on Ageless Radio.
So anyway, Dad's health was poor, so we moved from Essendon over to Western Suburbs. Dad was at Newport Railway Workshops, and he being an upholsterer, he made four of the chairs in the observation car in the Spirit of Progress. And, I think he made or renovated old furniture for our home, being an upholsterer.
What was your home like? What do you remember about home as a little girl?
Well, I was an only child, unfortunately. Depression years.
Do you actually remember the Depression years, Olive?
No, but I do. I can remember I went to Kingsville Primary School, which is out past West Footscray.
Mm-hmm.
We lived on Geelong Road when it was all paddocks. And when they used to drive the sheep down Geelong Road to the abattoirs, yes, down to Borthwick's, yes. Great flocks of sheep, you know. We went out to live in Surry Hills to be... my maternal grandparents lived at Ferntree Gully, and I think my mother felt it was desirable to be closer to them as they got older. So that's how we came to come out to Surry Hills. And we're at Surry Hills, and that is where I met my husband, late husband, and... my husband joined up from there. He was in the Navy, and I joined the Navy.
Well, Olive, before we talk about that, because I think there's some really, probably some very good stories there, but can I just take you back a few years to your first school experiences? What do you remember about school?
Oh, school. I can remember that in the height of the Depression, there was a girl in my grade, primary school. The father was a violin maker, a long thing, you know, no work at all, of course. They had one pair of boots, not shoes, boots, no socks, And Elfrida had the boots 1 week and her brother had the boots the other.
I have actually heard other people tell me that.
They were barefoot.
Yes.
And it was, and I can remember the soup kitchen, the mother's club had a copper in the shelter shed, a fuel
right.
copper.
Yes.
And they used to make soup.
Goodness.
Yeah.
And I guess for a lot of kids that probably would have been one of their main meals, wouldn't
That's
it?
That's right. Well, they at least had some nourishment, you know.
At the moment, our country's going through what they call a bad recession.
Oh, they don't know what it is.
I was just wondering
they
that.
They don't know what it is. Well, I'm fortunate because I've got elder daughters in pathology, younger daughters a nurse, and sons in the Navy. That's him, I think you're right. And he went straight from, they all went to Greythorn High, at it, and that's gone now, and it's all housing.
Mm.
He went straight from Greythorn High into the Navy, trained as a pilot. He was the youngest service pilot to get his wings. My very proud parents flew over to Western Australia for the graduation.
Oh, I bet.
Mm.
You must be proud of all your children.
Yes, well, I am, because they didn't need college education, you know, and they got by without it.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your children once we've covered you and your husband's life.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to school, did you enjoy school as a child?
Oh, you accepted it.
You just accepted it.
You accepted, yes.
Did you have any favourite subjects?
Oh, I suppose geography and history.
History, yes.
Mm-hmm.
What about friends? Did you have many friends as a child?
Yes, we had our next door neighbours when we lived on Geelong Road. There were three daughters in their family. That was another thing related to the Depression. My mother and the lady next door used to get on the bus and go down to Borthwick's, to the meat place, and get a side of lamb. And 1 week they'd have the leg and we'd have the four quarter and switch around. And tin tongues, used to buy the sheep's tongues tinned. And
goodness.
If the labels were damaged, you see, I think you got the tin of tongues for about 10 pence, it would be. What else was it they used to buy? Lamb's fries. I can't stand them now. They have them here because they've got to be very lightly cooked, you know.
Mm.
But no, you lived, and my father always had a vegetable garden, as my husband did too.
Mm.
So how people can say they can't afford to buy things if they grew their own.
Indeed.
Because you don't have to have a big garden. You can grow things in pots.
Yes, indeed.
Or hanging baskets.
Now, as a child, particularly going through the Depression, there was very little in the way of entertainment that was provided, was there? Because there was no television.
There was radio. I can remember going into the next door neighbours to listen to the Test cricket when it was from England with the Ashes, you know.
Right.
And I tell you what, I do remember the early days of radio. The other side of our place, the Sun was a ham radio bloke.
Yes.
And I can remember, I think it was 3AR, was the oldest of the first of the, and he sticking the headphones on me, you know. Oh, it was, you know, everybody was agog
with yes.
radio. It was, yes.
It was a very social thing, wasn't it, radio?
Oh,
families used
yes,
to listen together.
Oh, yes, one man's family, and that sort of thing, yes. I can remember my in-laws, as soon as tea at night, they'd clear the table and do the dishes and then sit down and listen to One Man's Family.
One Man's Family, now brought to you transcribed every weekday night at this time by Tabson, the new improved antihistaminic tablet for the symptoms of colds and hay fever. Chapter 11, Book 77, The Book of Henry. The head of the House of Barber still holds court from his bed at the family home. Ever since his return from the hospital, Henry has had a parade of visitors. Every day have come children, grandchildren, and in-laws. Never has he received so much attention. He's more than ever the hub of the family wheel now, and everything revolves around him, and he likes it. His wife, Fanny, however, is beginning to grow somewhat impatient with his refusal to bestir himself. She's tried all day to get him to try his new crutches, but with no success. The patient has had his evening meal and is now resting well. Oh, resting very well indeed.
Is there anything you want now, Henry?
Huh? Where are you going?
I thought I'd go down and sit in the library for a while and read the paper. Relax.
But can't you sit here and relax?
Well, I could, but Clifford got the paper down there.
And this is Listen to Older Voices. Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio.
They were very good. I mean, they were hard days, but they were good days, weren't they?
Yes, your expectations weren't as great. And then as far as entertainment come TV, I can remember the time of the Olympic Games in Melbourne? No.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we were living at Box Hill and people used to stand and around shops, electrical shops that had TVs in the window.
I remember that.
Do you?
Yes.
Yes, and we were very, very lucky. We had some very nice neighbours two doors away and he was the Ceylon government's representative in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And Cliff had gold pass. Well, we were entertaining, visiting dignitaries. Yes. And he said, because they went to everything, you know, and it was when I was pregnant with my younger daughter, and Cliff said to us one day, Anne and I have just had, he said, we're Olympic out. He said, would you like our gold pass? he said, I won't give it to you because I was very pregnant with Heather. But he said, if you'd like to go to the swimming, you're welcome to it. And he said, I'll see if I can get a pass from somebody else for our two elder children. But he said, I won't know until about 3:30 that day. And he said, I'll drive you into Hawthorne Tram Depot. Was there gardens there? And you can, I remember taking, he got the pass for the kids. And we took a picnic tea in, had our tea in the gardens there. And then went in and it was the old Olympic pool up near the Jolimont Railway Yards, and we had the third front row from the front in the VIP stand.
Very nice.
And we're there and just settled, and it hadn't quite started. People started turning around and looking. Prince Philip had got a trifle bored with the cycling, and he, Prince Philip, anyway, so he came down and sat. Oh, the kids nearly took off. He was two rows in front of us.
Goodness me.
Yes, and well, that was in the days when royalty was treated. You wouldn't have, not now, he'd have had a bodyguard. And
exactly, you couldn't have got anywhere near that close. No,
no, no, no.
Well, that was a close brush with royalty.
That's right. And Dawn Fraser, Ilse Conrads, John Conrads.
Secondary school, Olive.
When I went to high school at Williamstown, because in those days there were only 7 high schools in the metropolitan area.
Is that right?
Yeah, I had the choice of Essendon or Williamstown. And kids just walked to a school station, and I just walked up to West Footscray Station, got in the train, got out at Footscray, changed trains, went to Williamstown, and the high school was just outside the station.
And didn't think anything of it?
No. You went everywhere by train or bus.
Mm.
And it was quite safe to do it.
Mm. High school, did that, was that any more enjoyable than primary school? Do you have...
Oh, yes, I think so, because... the last Olympics before the war, I think it was. Anyway, it was at Munich, and one of our teachers was Australian diving champion. And she went to the games. And of course, that's got me interested, because I was in the Footscray Ladies Swimming Club, as this Leslie Thompson was. And, you know, just things were different.
How old were you when war broke out?
War broke out in, 39. I was born in 23. I was 16.
So you'd have a lot of clear memories about that.
Very clear memories, yes. And I was out with a group of young people. I think it was a Sunday night, and there was an extra edition of the paper came out, and as we were walking back down to Richmond Station, we heard about war. Didn't dream then that four of the boys from that night, that group, and two of another girl joined the Army, Beth, and I joined the Navy. My husband was in the Navy.
How old were you when you joined? You must have been young.
19.
Yes.
19. I remember clearly going down to... I did everything diplomatically. I waited until after lunch on the Saturday lunchtime. And my father was out in his vegetable garden. And I went down and I said to him, if I'd been a boy, you'd have expected I'd join one of the services. And you had no choice whether I was a boy or a girl. Mm. I said, I want to join the Navy. And he said, what did your mother say? And she said, ask you. It was as easy as that.
And that was it?
That was it.
Amazing.
Yes.
You must have been very surprised.
I was.
Expecting a bit of a fight.
Yes. Mm. And I worked at James Hardy, you know, the asbestos, and in the office there. And the office, when I went into the office manager and told him I'd join the Navy, he said, well, you might think you have, but he said, manpower won't release you because Hardys were doing all the...
essential service.
Yes. Mm. So Olive put a spanner in the works. Not only did Olive join the Navy, half the fellows from the office got then manpower because they could have girls doing the office work.
That's right.
Yes. Well, we had at Hardy's office in South Melbourne on the corner of City Road and Clarendon Street, we had what must have been the first of the teleprinters, and I had used the teleprinter there. So when I joined the Navy, of course, I went into communications, and that was it.
Oh, a couple of questions then. Yeah. So they didn't keep you out of the Navy because of the Manpower Act?
No.
Okay. Well, that which pleased you, obviously.
Oh, definitely, yes.
Right. Mm. And so you went into communications. Were you based in the same area for most of the war? Did you move around?
No, I was at... first of all, you went to Port Melbourne, where it's all units there now, Lonsdale. And that I was there, I think, for 6 weeks. And you did basic training, marching, squad drill, naval history, you know, you name it, you did it.
Mm.
And from there, I went to Cerberus down on Western Port. And my first leave I was coming home, and I got home on the Friday night, and just after I got inside, the front door bell rang, and my mother said, oh, you answer the door, because she knew all about this. She said, you answer the door while I serve the tea. And I went to the door, and this was the sailor that I married.
Wow, hang on. So this was obviously before you knew him, was it?
No, I knew him. Okay. This was a crowd of the young people from the church. He joined the Navy, and obviously came back all right. Mac, I think, is still alive, and his wife was in the Army.
This is part of the group, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And sadly, one of the other boys was killed over Munich. He was in the Air Force. And no, it was... and your lifestyle was just so different. So anyway, Keith was back at Cerberus to do a small ships course. So that was the Friday night. The next night, the Saturday night, I went out with him to the old picture theatre down in Canterbury. And I remember it was a bit of a joke in our family because it was a Loretta Young film and it was called Men in Her Life. And
did you have any idea you were going to marry Keith at this stage?
No.
Join Olive and myself next week to find out just how things went when Olive leaves the security of her family and friends in Melbourne to live in Sydney as a wren. We also learn of the connection between Olive and that most famous of all Australian production houses, Crawford Productions. That's next week on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Turak Times.